This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Aru Shah and the End of Time, a Pandava novel, Book 1, by Roshini Choksi. Read for you by Sunila Nankani. A note from the publisher. This audiobook contains a bonus PDF that can be viewed on any Mac or PC computer, or on your mobile device. 1. In which Aru regrets opening the door. The problem with growing up around highly dangerous things is that after a while you just get used to them. For as long as she could remember, Aru had lived in the Museum of Ancient Indian Art and Culture, and she knew full well that the lamp at the end of the Hall of the Gods was not to be touched. She could mention the Lamp of Destruction, the way a pirate who had tamed a sea monster could casually say, "Oh, you mean old Ralph here?" But even though she was used to the lamp, she had never once lit it. That would be against the rules. The rules she went over every Saturday when she led the afternoon visitors tour. Some folks may not like the idea of working on a weekend, but it never felt like work to Aru. It felt like a ceremony, like a secret. She would don her crisp scarlet vest with its 3 honeybee buttons. She would imitate her mother's museum curator voice. And people, this was the best part of all, would listen. Their eyes never left her face, especially when she talked about the cursed lamp. Sometimes she thought it was the most fascinating thing she ever discussed. A cursed lamp is a much more interesting topic than, say, a visit to the dentist. Although one could argue that both are cursed. Aru had lived at the museum for so long, it kept no secrets from her. She had grown up reading and doing her homework beneath the giant stone elephant at the entrance. Often she'd fall asleep in the theater and wake up just before the crackling self-guided tour recording announced that India became independent from the British in 1947. She even regularly hid a stash of candy in the mouth of a 400-year-old sea dragon statue, she named it Steve, in the West Wing. Aru knew everything about everything in the museum, except one thing. The lamp. For the most part, it remained a mystery. "It's not quite a lamp," her mother, renowned curator and archaeologist Dr. K.P. Shaw, had told her the first time she showed it to Aru. "We call it a diya." Aru remembered pressing her nose against the glass case, staring at the lump of clay. As far as cursed objects went, this was by far the most boring. It was shaped like a pinched hockey puck. Small markings, like bite marks, crimped the edges. And yet, for all its normalness, even the statues filling the Hall of the Gods seemed to lean away from the lamp, giving it a wide berth.
"Why can't we light it?"
she had asked her mother. Her mother hadn't met her gaze.
"Sometimes light illuminates things that are better left in the dark. Besides, you never know who is watching."
Well, Aru had watched. She'd been watching her entire life. Every day after school, she would come home, hang her backpack from the stone elephant's trunk, and creep toward the Hall of the Gods. It was the museum's most popular exhibit, filled with 100 statues of various Hindu gods. Her mother had lined the walls with tall mirrors so visitors could see the artifacts from all angles. The mirrors were vintage, a word Aru had used when she traded Burton Prater a greenish penny for a whopping $2 and half a Twix bar. Because of the tall crepe myrtles and elms standing outside the windows, the light that filtered into the Hall of the Gods always looked a little muted, feathered almost, as if the statues were wearing crowns of light. Aru would stand at the entrance, her gaze resting on her favorite statues. Lord Indra, the king of the heavens, wielding a thunderbolt. Lord Krishna playing his flutes. The Buddha,
sitting with his spine straight and legs folded in meditation, before her eyes would inevitably be drawn to the dia in its glass case. She would stand there for minutes, waiting for something, anything that would make the next day at school more interesting, or make people notice that she, Aru Shah, wasn't just another seventh grader slouching through middle school, but someone extraordinary. Aru was waiting for magic, and every day she was disappointed. "Do something," she whispered to the god statues. It was a Monday morning, and she was still in her pajamas. "You've got plenty of time to do something awesome, because I'm on autumn break." The statues did nothing. Aru shrugged and looked out the window. The trees of Atlanta, Georgia hadn't yet realized it was October. Only their top halves had taken on a scarlet and golden hue, as if someone had dunked them halfway in a bucket of fire and then plopped them back on the lawn. As Aru had expected, the day was on its way to being uneventful. That should have been her first warning. The world has a tendency to trick people. It likes to make a day feel as bright and lazy as sun-warmed honey dripping down a jar, as it waits until your guard is down. And that's when it strikes. Moments before the visitor alarm rang, Aru's mom had been gliding through the cramped two-bedroom apartment connected to the museum. She seemed to be reading three books at a time, while also conversing on the phone in a language that sounded like a chorus of tiny bells. Aru, on the other hand, was lying upside down on the couch and pelting pieces of popcorn at her, trying to get her attention. "Mom, don't say anything if you can take me to the movies." Her mom laughed gracefully into the phone. Aru scowled. Why couldn't she laugh like that? When Aru laughed, she sounded like she was choking on air. "Mom, don't say anything if we can get a dog. A Great Pyrenees. We can name him Beowulf." Now her mother was nodding with her eyes closed, which meant that she was sincerely paying attention. Just not to Aru. "Mom, don't say anything if I..." Breep, breep, breep. Her mother lifted a delicate eyebrow and stared at Aru. "You know what to do." Aru did know what to do. She just didn't want to do it. She rolled off the couch and Spider-Man crawled across the floor in one last bid to get her mother's attention. This was a difficult feat, considering that the floor was littered with books and half-empty chai mugs. She looked back to see her mom jotting something on a notepad. Slouching, Aru opened the door and headed to the stairs. Monday afternoons at the museum were quiet. Even Sherilyn, the head of museum security, and Aru's long-suffering babysitter on the weekends, didn't come in on Mondays. Any other day, except Sunday when the museum was closed, Aru would help hand out visitor stickers. She would direct people to the various exhibits and point out where the bathrooms were. Once she'd even had the opportunity to yell at someone when they'd patted the stone elephant, which had a very distinct "do not touch" sign. In Aru's mind, this applied to everyone who wasn't her. On Mondays, she had come to expect occasional visitors seeking temporary shelter from bad weather, or people who wanted to express their concern, in the gentlest way possible, that the Museum of Ancient Indian Art and Culture honored the devil, or sometimes just the FedEx man needing a signature for a package. What she did not expect when she opened the door to greet the new visitors was that they would be three students from Augustus Day School. Aru experienced one of those elevator-stopping-too-fast sensations. A low whoosh of panic hit her stomach as the three students stared down at her and her Spider-Man pajamas. The first, Poppy Lopez, crossed her tan, freckled arms. Her brown hair was pulled back in a ballerina bun. The second, Burton Prater, held out his hand, where an ugly penny sat in his palm. Burton was short and pale, and his striped black and yellow shirt made him look like an unfortunate bumblebee. The third, Arielle Reddy, the prettiest girl in their class, with her dark brown skin and shiny black hair, simply glared.
"I knew it," said Poppy triumphantly. "You told everyone in math class that your mom was taking you to France for break."
That's what Mom had promised, Aru thought. Last summer, Aru's mother had curled up on the couch, exhausted from another trip overseas. Right before she fell asleep, she had squeezed Aru's shoulder and said, "Perhaps I'll take you to Paris in the fall, Aru. There's a cafe along the Seine River where you can hear the stars come out before they dance in the night sky. We'll go to boulangeries and museums, sip coffee from tiny cups, and spend hours in the gardens." That night, Aru had stayed awake dreaming of narrow, winding streets and gardens so fancy that even their flowers looked haughty. With that promise in mind, Aru had cleaned her room and washed the dishes without complaint, and at school, the promise had become her armor. All the other students at Augustus Day School had vacation homes in places like the Maldives or Provence, and they complained when their yachts were under repair. The promise of Paris had brought Aru one tiny step closer to belonging. Now, Aru tried not to shrink under Poppy's blue-eyed gaze.
"My mom had a top-secret mission with the museum. She couldn't take me."
That was partly true. Her mom never took her on work trips. Burton threw down the green penny.
"You cheated me. I gave you $2.
"And you got a vintage penny," started Aru.
Arielle cut her off.
"We know you're lying, Aru Shah. That's what you are, a liar. And when we go back to school, we're going to tell everyone."
Aru's inside squished. When she'd started at Augustus Day School last month, she'd been hopeful. But that had been short-lived. Unlike the other students, she didn't get driven to school in a sleek black car. She didn't have a home offshore. She didn't have a study room or a sunroom. Just a room. And even she knew that her room was really more like a closet with delusions of grandeur. But what she did have was imagination. Aru had been daydreaming her whole life. Every weekend, while she waited for her mom to come home, she would concoct a story. Her mother was a spy, an ousted princess, a sorceress. Her mom claimed she never wanted to go on business trips, but they were a necessity to keep the museum running. And when she came home and forgot about things, like Aru's chess games or choir practice, it wasn't because she didn't care, but because she was too busy juggling the state of war and peace and art. So at Augustus Day School, whenever the other kids asked, Aru told tales, like the ones she told herself. She talked about cities she'd never visited and meals she'd never eaten. If she arrived with scuffed-up shoes, it was because her old pair had been sent to Italy for repair. She'd mastered that delicate, condescending eyebrow everyone else had, and she deliberately mispronounced the names of stores where she bought her clothes, like the French Target and the German Walmart. If that failed, she'd just sniff and say, "Trust me, you wouldn't recognize the brand." And in this way, she had fit in. For a while, the lies had worked. She'd even been invited to spend a weekend at the lake with Poppy and Arielle. But Aru had ruined everything the day she was caught sneaking from the carpool line. Arielle had asked which car was hers. Aru pointed at one, and Arielle's smile turned thin. "That's funny, because that's my driver's car." Arielle was giving Aru the same sneer now.
"You told us you have an elephant," said Poppy.
Aru pointed at the stone elephant behind her.
"I do. You said that you rescued it from India."
Well, Mom said it was salvaged from a temple, which is fancy talk for rescue. And you said you have a cursed lamp, said Ariel. Aru saw the red light on Burton's phone, steady and unblinking. He was recording her. She panicked. What if the video went online? She had two possible choices. One, she could hope the universe might take pity on her and allow her to burst into flames before homeroom. Or two, she could change her name, grow a beard, and move away. Or, to avoid the situation entirely, she could show them something impossible. The cursed lamp is real, she said. I can prove it. Two. Oops. It was 4 p.m. when Aru and her three classmates walked together into the Hall of the Gods. 4 p.m. is like a basement, wholly innocent in theory. But if you really think about a basement, it is cement poured over restless earth. It has smelly, unfinished spaces and wooden beams that cast two sharp shadows. It is something that says, almost, but not quite. 4 p.m. feels that way, too. Almost, but not quite afternoon anymore. Almost, but not quite evening yet. And it is the way of magic and nightmares to choose those almost but not quite moments and wait. Where's your mom anyway? Asked Poppy. In France, said Aru, trying to hold her chin up. I couldn't go with her because I had to take care of the museum. She's probably lying again, said Burton. She's definitely lying. That's the only thing she's good at, said Ariel. Aru wrapped her arms around herself. She was good at lots of things, if only people would notice. She was good at memorizing facts she had heard just once. She was good at chess, too, to the point where she might have gone to the state championship if Poppy and Ariel hadn't told her, nobody joins chess, Aru. You can't do that. And so Aru had quit the chess team. She used to be good at tests, too. But now, every time she sat down to take a test, all she could think of was how expensive the school was. It was costing her mom a fortune, and how everyone was judging her shoes, which were popular last year but not this year. Aru wanted to be noticed, but she kept getting noticed for all the wrong reasons. I thought you said you had a condo downtown. But this dump was the address in the school directory, sniffed Ariel. So you actually live in a museum? Yep. No? Look around. Do you see my room? It's upstairs. If you don't live here, then why are you wearing pajamas? Everyone wears PJs during the daytime in England, said Aru. Maybe. It's what royalty does. If I were royalty, I would. Whatever, Aru. The four of them stood in the Hall of the Gods. Poppy wrinkled her nose. Why do your gods have so many hands? The tops of Aru's ears turned red. It's just how they are. Aren't there, like, 1,000 gods? I don't know, said Aru. And this time she was telling the truth. Her mother had said that the Hindu gods were numerous, but they didn't stay as one person all the time. Sometimes they were reincarnated. Their soul was reborn in someone else. Aru liked this idea. Sometimes she wondered who she might have been in another life. Maybe that version of Aru would have known how to vanquish the beast that was the 7th grade. Her classmates ran through the Hall of the Gods. Poppy jutted out her hip, flicked her hands in imitation of one of the statues, then started laughing. Ariel pointed at the full-bodied curves of the goddesses and rolled her eyes. Heat crawled through Aru's stomach. She wanted all the statues to shatter on the spot. She wished they weren't so naked. so different. It reminded her of last year, when her mother had taken her to the sixth grade honors banquet at her old school. Aru had worn what she thought was her prettiest outfit, a bright blue salwar kameez, flecked with tiny star-shaped mirrors and embroidered with thousands of silver threads. Her mother had worn a deep red sari. Aru had felt like part of a fairy tale, at least until the moment they had entered the banquet hall, and every gaze had looked too much like pity or embarrassment. One of the girls had loudly whispered, "Doesn't she know it isn't Halloween?" Aru had faked a stomach ache to leave early. "Stop it," she said now, when Burton started poking at Lord Shiva's trident.
"Why?"
Because there are cameras, and when my mom comes back, she'll tell the government of India and they'll come after you. Lie, lie, lie. But it worked. Burton stepped back. "So where's this lamp?" asked Ariel. Aru marched to the back of the exhibit. The glass case winked in the early evening light. Beneath it, the diya looked wrapped in shadows, dusty and dull.
"That's it," said Poppy. "That looks like something my brother made in kindergarten."
"The museum acquired the diya of Bharata after 1947, when India gained its independence from Britain," Aru said, in her best impression of her mother's voice. "It is believed that the lamp of Bharata once resided in the temple of..." Do not mispronounce Kurukshetra. "Kurukshetra."
"Kuru what? Weird name. Why was it there?"
asked Burton. "Because that is the site of the Mahabharata War."
"The what war?"
Aru cleared her throat and went into museum attendant mode. "The Mahabharata is one of two ancient poems. It was written in Sanskrit, an ancient Indic language that is no longer spoken." Aru paused for effect. "The Mahabharata tells the story of a civil war between the five Pandava brothers and their 100 cousins."
100 cousins, said Ariel. "That's impossible."
Aru ignored her. "Legend says that lighting the lamp of Bharata awakens the sleeper, a demon who will summon Lord Shiva, the fearsome lord of destruction, who will dance upon the world and bring an end to time."
"A dance," scoffed Burton.
"A cosmic dance," said Aru, trying to make it sound better. When she thought of Lord Shiva dancing, she imagined someone stomping their feet on the sky, cracks appearing in the clouds like lightning, the whole world breaking and splintering apart. But it was clear her classmates were picturing someone doing the Cotton-Eyed Joe.
"So if you light the lamp, the world ends?" asked Burton.
Aru glanced at the lamp, as if it might consider contributing a few words. But it stayed silent, as lamps are wont to do.
"Yes."
Ariel's lip curled. "So do it. If you're telling the truth, then do it."
"If I'm telling the truth, which I am, by the way, then do you have any idea what it could do?"
"Don't try to get out of this. Just light it once. I dare you." Burton held up his phone. Its red light taunted her. Aru swallowed. If her mom were down here, she would drag her away by the ears. But she was upstairs getting ready to go away. Yet again. Honestly, if the lamp was so dangerous, then why keep leaving her alone with it? Yeah, Sherilyn was there, but Sherilyn spent most of the time watching Real Housewives of Atlanta. Maybe it wouldn't be a big deal. She could just light a small flame, then blow it out. Or instead, maybe she could break the glass case and act like she'd been cursed. She could start zombie walking. Or Spider-Man crawling. They'd all be scared enough never to talk about what had happened.
Please, oh please. I'll never lie again, I promise. She repeated this in her head as she reached for the glass case and lifted it. As soon as the glass was removed, thin red beams of light hit the lamp. If a single strand of hair fell on any of those laser beams, a police car would come rushing to the museum. Poppy, Ariel, and Burton inhaled sharply at the same time. Aru felt smug. See, I told you it was important. She wondered if she could just stop there. Maybe this would be enough. And then Poppy leaned forward.
Get it over with, she said. I'm bored.
Aru punched in the security code, her birthday, and watched as the red beams disappeared. The air mingled with the scent of the clay dia. It smelled like the inside of a temple, all burnt things and spices.
Just tell the truth, Aru, said Ariel. If you do, all you have to do is pay us $10 each, and we won't post the video of you getting caught in your own stupid lie.
But Aru knew that wouldn't be the end of it. Between a demon that could end the world and a seventh-grade girl, Aru, and probably most people, would choose the demon any day. Without the red beams on it, the lamp felt dangerous, as if it had somehow sensed there was one less barrier. Cold stitched up Aru's spine, and her fingers felt numb. The small metal dish in the middle of the lamp looked a lot like an unblinking eye, staring straight at her.
I don't have a match, said Aru, taking a step back. I do.
Poppy held out a green lighter.
I got it from my brother's car.
Aru reached for the lighter. She flicked the little metal wheel, and a tiny flame erupted. Her breath caught. Just a quick light. Then she could enact Plan Melodramatic Aru and get herself out of this mess and never, ever, ever lie again. As she brought the flame closer to the lamp, the Hall of the Gods grew dark, as if a switch had turned off all the natural light. Poppy and Ariel moved closer. Burton tried to get closer too, but Poppy shoved him away.
Aru.
A voice seemed to call out to her from inside the clay lamp. She almost dropped the lighter, but her fist clenched around it just in time. She couldn't look away from the lamp. It seemed to pull her closer and closer.
Aru. Aru. Aru.
Just get it over with, Shaw, screeched Ariel.
The red light on Burton's phone blinked in the corner of her vision. It promised a horrific year. Cafeteria coleslaw in her locker, her mother's face crumpling in disappointment. But maybe if she did this, if by some stroke of luck she managed to trick Ariel and Poppy and Burton, maybe they'd let her sit beside them at lunch. Maybe she wouldn't have to hide behind her stories, because her own life would finally be enough. So she did it. She brought the flame to the lip of the dia. When her finger brushed the clay, a strange thought burst into Aru's head. She remembered watching a nature documentary about deep-sea creatures, how some of them used bait, like a glowing orb, to attract their prey. The moment a fish dared to swim toward the little light floating in the water, the sea creature would snatch it up with huge gaping jaws. That was how the lamp felt, a small halo of brightness held out by a monster crouching in the shadows. A trick? The moment the flame caught, light exploded behind Aru's eyes. A shadow unfurled from the lamp, its spine arching and reaching. It made a horrible sound. Was that laughter? She couldn't shake the noise from her head. It clung to her thoughts like an oily residue. It was as if all the silence had been scraped off and thrown somewhere else. Aru stumbled back
as the shadow thing limped out of the lamp. Panic dug into her bones. She tried to blow out the candle, but the flame didn't budge. Slowly, the shadow grew into a nightmare. It was tall and spidery, horned and fanged and furred.
Oh, Aru, 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 what have you done?
3. Wake up. Aru woke up on the floor. The lights flickered. Something about the room smelled off, like it was rusting. She heaved herself up on her elbows, eyes seeking the lamp. But it was gone. There was no sign that it had even been there except for the glass shards on the floor. Aru craned her neck to look behind her. All the statues were facing her. Ice trickled down her spine. Poppy? She called, pushing herself to a stand. Ariel? Burton? That's when she saw them. All three were still huddled together. They looked like a movie that had been paused in the middle of a fight scene. Poppy's hand was on Burton's chest. He was on his heels, tipping backward, about to fall. Arielle's eyes were screwed shut, her mouth open in a silent scream. They were suspended in time. Aru reached out and touched them. Their skin was warm. A pulse leaped at each of their throats, but they didn't move. Couldn't move. What had happened? Her gaze snagged on the red light in Burton's pocket. The phone. Maybe she could rewind the recording. But the phone wouldn't budge from his pocket. Everything was frozen. Except her. This was a dream. It had to be. She pinched herself. Ow! She said, wincing. She was definitely awake. In a way, so were her classmates. But then, how was everything so... still? A creaking sound echoed outside the Hall of the Gods. She stood up straighter. It sounded a lot like a door. Mom? She whispered, running out. Her mother must have heard the noise and come downstairs. She'd know what to do. At the entrance to the Hall of the Gods, Aru saw three things that made no sense. One, her mother was frozen too. Both feet off the ground, as if she'd been caught in mid-jog. Her black hair hadn't even fallen against her back. Her eyes and mouth were open wide with panic. Two, the whole room looked strange and lightless and flat, because nothing had a shadow. Three, the creaking sound hadn't come from the door. It had come from the elephant. Aru watched, stuck somewhere between awe and horror, as the stone elephant that had been standing in the museum for decades suddenly sank to the ground. It lifted its trunk, the same trunk Aru had been using as a backpack hook for years, to its forehead. In one swift, creaking movement, its jaw unhinged. Panicked, Aru ran toward her mom. She reached for her hand, trying to yank her out of the air. Mom, the elephant is possessed. You really need to wake up. Her mom didn't move. Aru followed her gaze. She'd been staring straight at the Hall of the Gods the moment she was frozen. Mom? A voice boomed from the hollow of the elephant, deep and rough and wizened. Aru shrank.
Who has dared to light the lamp?
Called the voice. It was as dark as a thunderstorm. Aru thought bolts of lightning might shoot out of the elephant's mouth, which, under any other circumstance, would have been very exciting.
Who has dared to wake the sleeper from his slumber?
Aru shuddered. I did, but I didn't mean to.
You lie, warrior. And for that I am summoned.
The sound of flapping wings echoed from the elephant's open mouth. Aru gulped. This was the end. Aru was sure of it. Did birds eat people? It probably depended on the size of the bird, or the size of the person. Not wanting to test the idea, she tried burying her face in her mother's side, but she couldn't fit under her stiff arm. The sounds from the elephant rose steadily. A shadow lengthened on the ground, huge and winged. Whatever had been speaking flew out of the elephant's mouth. It was a pigeon.
Ew! Aru exclaimed.
Her mother had often reminded her that pigeons were rats with wings.
Where is he? Demanded the pigeon. One of the ancient five warriors lit the lamp of Bharata.
Aru tilted her head, a question flying out of her before she could stop herself.
Why does your voice sound different?
From inside the elephant, the bird had sounded like it could convince a mountain to turn into a volcano. Now it sounded like her math teacher that one time he had tried to perform a cappella, but had stepped on a Lego piece. For the rest of the day, he'd spoken in an anxious, sulky voice. The pigeon puffed out its chest.
Is there something wrong with how I sound, human girl?
No, but...
Do I not look like a bird capable of great devastation?
I mean...
Because I shall have you know that whole cities revile me. They say my name like a curse.
Is that a good thing?
It's a powerful thing, sniffed the bird. And between good and power, I will always choose the latter.
Is that why you're a pigeon?
Could a bird narrow its eyes? If not, this one had certainly mastered the illusion.
The lamp was lit. The sleeper will start to awaken. It is my sacred duty to guide the Pandava brother who lit it.
Pandava? Aru repeated.
She knew that name. It was the last name of the five brothers in the Mahabharata poem. Her mother had said that each of them held great powers and could wield fantastic weapons because they were the sons of gods. Heroes. But what did that have to do with the lamp? Had she hit her head without noticing? She felt around her scalp for a bump.
Yes, Pandava, sneered the pigeon.
It puffed out its chest.
Only one of the five Pandava brothers could light the lamp. Do you know where he went, human girl?
Aru lifted her chin.
I lit the lamp.
The bird stared, and then stared some more.
Well then... We might as well let the world end.
4. Ineptitude. Aru had read somewhere that if you stare at a chimpanzee, it will stare back, smile, and then attack you. She hadn't read anything about what kind of consequences might follow from staring at a pigeon. But she did know that gazes were powerful things. Her mom used to tell her stories of Gandhari, a queen who chose to go through life blindfolded, out of empathy for her blind husband. Only once did she take off the blindfold to look at her eldest son. Her stare was so powerful, it could have made him invincible. If he'd been naked. But no, he was too embarrassed to go without his underwear. He was still super strong, just not as strong as he could have been. Aru sympathized with him. That must have been a horribly awkward moment. And so Aru maintained eye contact with the pigeon, but took one step back. Finally, the bird relented. It hung its head. Its wings drooped.
The last dormant Pandavas were so brilliant, it said, shaking its head. The last Arjuna was a senator. The last Yudhisthira was a famous judge. The last Bhima was an Olympic athlete. And Nakula and Sahadeva were famous male models who wrote fabulous best-selling self-help books and started the world's first hot yoga studios. And now look at what has become of the line. A girl child of all things.
Aru didn't think this was particularly fair. Even famous people had been children at some point. Judges weren't born wearing wigs and carrying gavels. And that led to another question. What was the bird going on about? All of those names, Arjuna, Yudhisthira, Bhima, Nakula, and Sahadeva, were the names of the five most famous Pandava brothers. There was one more, Karna, the secret Pandava. In the stories, the other Pandavas didn't even know he was their brother until the war had begun. And why did the bird say dormant? Didn't that mean sleeping? The pigeon flopped onto its back and draped one wing dramatically over its beak.
So this is to be my fate, it moaned. I used to be going places, top of my class, you know?
It sniffed. Sorry?
Oh, that's useful.
The pigeon lifted its wing and glared at her.
You should have thought about that before you plunged us into this mess. Just look at you. The horror.
It covered its face with both wings, muttering to itself.
Why must every generation have its heroes?
Wait, so there's been five Pandava brothers in every generation? Asked Aru.
Unfortunately, said the bird, throwing off its wings.
And I'm one of them?
Please don't make me say it again.
But how can you be sure?
Because you lit the lamp.
Aru paused. She had lit the lamp. She had lowered the flame to the metal lip of the object. But it was Poppy's brother's lighter. Did that count? And she was only going to light it for a second, not keep it lit. Did that make her only a smidge of a hero?
I'm fairly positive you are a Pandava, continued the bird. Mostly positive. I am, at least, definitely not going to say no. Otherwise, why would I be here? And on that note, why am I here? What does it mean to wear this wretched body?
It stared at the ceiling.
Who am I?
Ah,
never mind, said the bird with a resigned sigh. If you've lit that cursed lamp, the other one will know.
Who?
We'll just have to go through the door of many. It always knows. Plus, that's a great deal easier than putting something in Google Maps. Most confusing contraption of this century.
You're a bird. Shouldn't you know which direction you're going in?
I'm not just any bird, you uppity hero. I am...
The bird spluttered, then stopped.
I guess it doesn't matter who I am. What matters is that we stop this before any true destruction takes place. For the next 9 days, time will freeze wherever the sleeper walks. On the 9th day, the sleeper will reach the Lord of Destruction, and Shiva will perform the dance to end all time.
Can't the Lord of Destruction just say no thanks?
You know nothing of the gods, sniffed the pigeon.
Aru stopped to consider that. She wasn't shocked by the idea that gods and goddesses existed, only that a person could actually get to know them. They were like the moon, distant enough not to enter her thoughts too often, bright enough to inspire wonder. Aru looked back at her frozen mom and classmates. So they'll just be stuck like that?
It's temporary, said the bird, provided you aren't riddled with ineptitude.
Ineptitude? Is that French? The bird knocked its head against a wooden banister.
The universe has a cruel sense of humor, it moaned. You are one of the few who can make things right again. Then again, you are also the one who started it, and so you and the other must be heroes.
That didn't sound very heroic to Aru. It just sounded like an epic mess that required an epic cleanup. Her shoulders drooped. What do you mean, the other?
Your sibling, of course. You think you can quest alone? Questing requires families, said the bird. Your brother, or perhaps sister, although I don't think that's ever happened, will be waiting for you. When one Pandava awakens, so too does another, usually the one who is best equipped to deal with the challenge at hand. Until now, the Pandavas have always appeared as fully grown people, not squished bundles of hormones and incompetence.
Thanks.
Come along, girl child.
Who are you?
Aru wasn't going to move a step without some kind of verification, but she doubted the bird carried a wallet. The pigeon paused, then said,
Though such an illustrious name should not be uttered by a child, you may call me Subala.
It preened.
I was. It's a long story. Point is, I'm here to help.
Why should I go with you?
Ungrateful child. Have you no sense of dharma? This is your task. The freeze will keep spreading like a disease in the sleeper's wake. If he's not stopped by the new moon, your mother will stay that way forever. Is that what you want?
Aru's cheeks heated. Of course she didn't want that. But she also felt as if the whole world had spun the wrong way, and she was still finding her balance.
Your name is Subala?
That's way too many syllables, said Aru,
fear snaking into her heart.
What if I need help and have to call for you? I could lose an arm or a leg while just trying to say the whole thing. I'm calling you Sue.
Sue is a girl's name. I am male.
Aru, who was often stuck listening to Sherilyn's Johnny Cash playlist, did not agree with Subala.
No, it's not. There was a boy named Sue. You know, his daddy left home when he was 3.
Spare me the vileness of country music,
huffed Subala, flying toward the elephant's mouth. Well, if he wouldn't be called Sue, what about...
Boo! Shouted Aru.
Subala turned his head, realized what he'd done, and cursed.
He perched on top of the elephant's trunk. You may have won this, but I'd wipe that smug grin off your face fairly quickly if I were you. Serious consequences have been triggered by your actions, girl child. As this generation's Pandava, it's now your duty to answer the call to questing. The need hasn't arisen in more than 800 years, but I'm sure your mother told you all that.
Boo peered at her.
She did tell you, didn't she?
Aru fell quiet as she recalled the kinds of things her mother had told her over the years. They were small things that wouldn't help thaw the frozen people in this room. How a flock of starlings was called a murmuration. How some tails were nested inside other tails. And how you should always leave the mint leaves for last when making chai. But there'd been no mention of quests. No discussion of Aru being a Pandava. Or how she came to be that way. And there'd certainly been no instructions about how she should prepare herself in case she accidentally triggered the end of the universe. Maybe her mom didn't think Aru would be any good at it. Maybe she hadn't wanted to get Aru's hopes up that she could do something heroic. Aru couldn't lie this time. It wasn't a situation she could talk herself out of and magically be okay.
No, she said, forcing herself to meet Boo's gaze.
But what she saw made her hands tighten into fists. The pigeon was doing that narrowing his eyes thing. He was looking at her as if she were not much to look at. And that was wrong. She had the blood, or at least the soul, of a hero. Or something like that. She wasn't quite sure about the mechanics of reincarnation.
I may not know, she said, but I can learn.
Boo cocked his head. The lies bubbled happily to her throat, words of self-comfort, words of deceit that weren't necessarily bad.
My teacher once called me a genius, she exclaimed.
She did not mention that her gym teacher had called her that in a not very nice way. Aru had established a record time for her of taking 14 minutes to run a mile lap around the track. The next time that they ran to beat their previous records, she'd ignored the track altogether and just walked across the field to the finish line. Her teacher had scowled at her and said, "You think you're a genius or something?"
"And I'm an A student," she told Boo.
In the sense that she was a student whose name started with an A. The more claims she made, even if they were only half-truths at best, the better she felt. Words had their own power.
"Excellent. All my fears have been allayed," said Boo dryly. "Now come on, time is a-wasting."
He cooed, and the elephant's mouth widened to the size of a door, its jaw hitting the ground. A breeze from some other place gusted toward her, swirling through the stuffy air of the museum. One step forward, and she'd be wandering far from Atlanta. She'd be in an entirely different world. Excitement rushed through her, followed by a painful pinch of guilt. If she couldn't fix this, her mom would become like everything else in the museum, a dusty relic. Aru brushed her fingers against her mother's stiff hand. "I'll fix this," she said. "I promise."
"You'd better," snapped Boo,
from his place on the elephant's trunk. 5. The Other Sister. Grabbing one of the elephant tusks as a handrail, Aru stepped into the statue's mouth. Inside it was cold and dry, and far larger than seemed possible. A hall appeared, carved out of stone and marble, and the ceiling soared overhead. Aru stared around her, stunned, as she remembered every time she'd leaned against the elephant, never knowing it had been hiding a magical corridor within it. Boo flew down the passageway, urging her forward.
"Come along, come along!"
Aru ran to keep up. The hallway sealed itself behind her. Ahead was a closed door. Light slipped out from a gap on one side. Boo perched on her shoulder and pecked her ear.
"What was that for?" exclaimed Aru.
"That was for renaming me," said the pigeon too smugly. "Now, tell the Door of Many that you need to go to your sibling who has awakened."
Sibling? Aru suddenly felt sick. Her mom traveled most weekends. Was she working or was she visiting her other children? Children she prefers spending time with.
"How can I have a sibling?"
"Blood isn't the only thing that makes you related to someone," said Boo. "You have a sibling because you share divinity. You are a child of the gods because one of them helped forge your soul. That doesn't make a difference to your genetics. Genetics might say that you're never going to be taller than 5 feet. Your soul doesn't care about that. Souls don't have height, you know."
Aru hadn't heard anything after, "You're a child of the gods." Up until this point, her brain had only distantly understood that she could be a Pandava. But if she was a Pandava, that meant that a god had helped make her and claimed her as his own, as his kid. Her hand flew to her heart. Aru had the strangest impulse to reach into herself as if she might pluck out her own soul. She wanted to look at the back of it as if it had a tag like on a t-shirt. What would it say?
"Made in the heavens. Kinda." If she couldn't hold it, it didn't seem real.
And then another thought took root, one that was even stranger than the fact that a god was her dad.
"So I'm like a goddess?" she asked.
"That wouldn't be so bad."
"No,"
said Boo.
"But the Pandavas were like demigods.
They could use divine weapons and stuff. So that makes me half a goddess, right? Asked Aru. She examined her hands, flexing them like Spider-Man did whenever he started shooting out webs. Does that mean I get to do magical things, too? Do I get powers? Or a cape?
There shall be no capes.
A hat?
No. Theme song? Please stop.
Aru looked down at her clothes. If she was going to be meeting some long-lost sibling, she really wished she were wearing something other than Spider-Man pajamas. What happens after I meet them? Boo did that pigeon thing where he regarded her at an angle.
Well, we must go to the other world, of course. Not quite what it used to be. It dwindles with humanity's imagination, so I suspect it is currently the size of a closet. Or perhaps a shoebox.
Then how will I fit?
It will make room, said Boo airily. You should have seen it in its glory days. There was a night bazaar where you could purchase dreams on a string. If you had a good singing voice, you could use it to buy rice pudding dusted with moonlight. Finest thing I've ever eaten. Well, second only to a spicy demon. Mmm.
He ignored Aru's cringe.
We'll take you to the Court of the Sky. There, you may formally ask the Council of Guardians for the details of your quest.
Boo's feathers ruffled when he mentioned the Council.
You'll get your weapons. I shall get my place of honor back, make no mistake. And then it's up to you and your brother. Or sister, gods help us.
Weapons? Repeated Aru. What kind of weapons? That's not something they teach you in seventh grade. How am I supposed to stop the sleeper from getting to the Lord of Destruction if I can't throw a bow and arrow?
You shoot a bow and arrow.
Right. I knew that. Aru wasn't exactly the best at gym. Just last week, she'd scratched at the inside of her nose hard enough to fake a nosebleed and get out of dodgeball.
Perhaps you have a hidden talent somewhere inside you, said Boo.
He squinted at her.
Buried quite deeply, I imagine.
But if there are all these deities, why don't they help? Why leave it up to, as you said, a bundle of hormones and incompetence?
Gods and goddesses may occasionally help, but they don't mess around with affairs that affect only humans. To them, mortal lives are but a speck of dust on the eyelash.
You don't think the gods would be even a little upset to find out that their entire universe was stamped out? Boo shrugged.
Even time has to end. The real measure of when others will get involved comes down to whether or not you succeed. The gods will accept the outcome either way.
Aru gulped. Awesome. That's just the best. Boo nipped her ear.
Ow, said Aru. Could you not? You are a child of the gods. Stand up straight.
Aru rubbed her ear. A deity was her father. She still couldn't quite believe it. She had lied about many things, but she'd never invented stories about a father. She would have felt ridiculous bragging about someone who had no interest in her. Why should she go out of her way to make him sound better than he actually was? He'd never been there. The end. Her mother didn't speak of him either. There was only one photo of a man in the house. He was handsome and dark-haired, with skin the color of dark amber. And he had the strangest pair of eyes. One was blue and one was brown. But Aru wasn't even sure he was her father. And he didn't look like a deity at all. At least, not like anyone in the Hall of the Gods. Then again, ancient statues weren't always a good reference. Everyone looked the same when they were cut out of granite and sandstone, and their features were worn down to faded smiles and half-lidded eyes. Apparently, she herself was divine-ish, But whenever she looked in the mirror, all she noticed was that her eyebrows kept trying to join up. And it stood to reason that if you were even a little bit divine, you should not.